Hello and welcome to today's update on the operating review and interim management statement. Throughout this, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this is being recorded. Today I'm very pleased to pass you over to John Dawson at Rolls-Royce. John, please begin.
Thank you, Hugh, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, for those in the U.K., and good morning to those of you in the United States. This call is primarily for the benefit of our U.S. shareholders, who hopefully have an opportunity to dial in this afternoon, and of course to analysts and investors here in the U.K. who may have further questions that they wish to ask management. My name is John Dawson. I'm Head of Investor Relations at Rolls-Royce. With me are Warren East, our Chief Executive, and David Smith, our Chief Financial Officer. Warren will be taking the lead on the presentation today. Before I hand over to him, I would remind you to review our safe harbor statement, which is attached to the PowerPoint and is available on our website. We will have plenty of time for questions at the end of the presentation, which should last about 5 minutes. Please wait for the operator's instructions to register for a question at the end of our opening remarks. Thank you, and without further ado, let me hand you over to Warren.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everyone in the call in the U.S. Thanks for joining us today, and apologize about the short notice. We have an hour available for the call, but our IR team will be able to communicate after the call, and we'll set up meetings and telephone conferences as required. As you've seen in the U.K. this morning, we issued an interim management statement, and that covered three main areas. Firstly, initial findings from the operational review that I've been doing. Secondly, an update on the outlook for 2015. And finally, our current views on 2016 and the headwinds that we're facing transitioning from 2015 into 2016 from a profit point of view. Now, this IMS included some very difficult but necessary messages, and that's why we want to take the time to hold conference calls and to be able to spend time with investors explaining more about the issues and, importantly, what we plan to do about things. So let's go on to the key messages slide, the first slide. I'd like to reiterate to start with that after 4 months of being in the business, everything I've seen has confirmed the good things that I saw. My view that the company has a strong portfolio of products and services, definitely has world-class engineering capability, and actually is well-positioned in the market to generate high market shares and strong cash flow, and actually in the longer term, higher returns on capital. And we're preparing for an increase in our wide-body engine production, an increase which doubles our production from around 300 to around 600 engines per year. And that is a reflection of a very strong order book and a growing market share. So that's good stuff. During the year, we've also taken steps to improve our balance sheet, strengthen our balance sheet, and improve liquidity. And so that puts us in a strong position as well. But we've been faced with a number of headwinds that continue to impact 2015, and they have material implications for 2016. And I'll discuss that in a bit more detail shortly. But in summary, in common with most industry players, we're seeing significant changes in some of the end markets in which we operate. And this is primarily lower demand within the corporate jets and regional jet market, reduced utilization of older wide-body jets as well. And we're also seeing a continued and even more severe deterioration in the offshore sector, to which our marine business is exposed. So for the current year, our overall guidance is actually unchanged, although we do expect profit to be at the lower end of that range. And our assessment of the profit headwinds for 2016, however, totaled some £650 million in total. And that equates to a further £350 million of headwinds compared with what we talked about in July. Good news, in cash flow terms, however, we expect a much more consistent year-on-year performance, and we can explain that difference in a little while. So clearly the conditions that we face are challenging and our expected performance is disappointing. And for me, it's also striking that the revenue impact of these changes in the market, that the revenue impact is relatively small, but the profit impact for us is large. Interesting observation, and we'll come back to that. So as you know, I've been undertaking an operational review for the past few months, and I had been preparing to present conclusions to you later in November, but in the light of the numbers coming together for today and reflecting on the size of that, we decided that I should definitely bring forward the announcement of at least the headlines of what I think we need to do as a result of the operational review that's been going on. I understand that it's the whole thing makes unpleasant news, and it's a good opportunity to make sure that people have time to digest this before we start talking on November the 24th. So let's look at some guidance, 2015 guidance. We've guided to the lower end of the profit range that we gave in July, but otherwise it is actually unchanged on a constant exchange rate basis. It's a reflection of growing headwinds that we've seen coming through the year, but those growing headwinds are offset by some of the mitigating actions that we've already taken. But the impact in 2016 is more severe, as we feel the full force of these market impacts and some of the market changes, and in particular some of those changes which have come along a bit faster than we had previously anticipated. So let's turn to 2016 now. We've set out in the statement, and we're outlining on this slide, the key factors that we see that are making up the challenges for the coming year. The £650 million headline figure consists of £300 million that was identified in July, in particular relating to the impact of the slowdown in the Trent 700 order book. I note that we believe the initial estimation that we made in July remains absolutely valid. So this is essentially the same position that we were in July. However, since then, we can also see a further approximately £100 million impact if we look at corporate and regional jets together. And in the corporate jet market, we're seeing further weakness in demand for those business jet engines, particularly for new orders. And then in the regional market, we're seeing weakening demand for aftermarket services in the 50 to 70 seat category, where people are simply not flying those aeroplanes for a variety of reasons. If we look in the large engines area, then we have about a £100 to £150 million headwind in large engines. We're seeing good growth in installed thrust, but that's being offset by some selected short-term weaknesses on some older wide-body programs. And this is where aircraft are being temporarily parked up by some players in the industry as they manage a transition to new, more efficient aircraft. The net effect of that is about £100 to £150 million of profit. Finally, there's an additional £75 to £100 million of further headwinds for the marine business as the market there continues to weaken for both the original equipment sales and for services in the offshore sector. So these profit effects taken all together are quite dramatic. However, as I mentioned earlier, the impact on cash flow is a lot less, and that's because of the non-cash nature of the adjustments as a result of TotalCare accounting adjustments in 2015 compared with those adjustments in 2016. There's a bigger adjustment in 2015, it's a positive, and a smaller adjustment in 2016. Therefore, the negative profit swing is somewhat less by the time you look at it from a cash point of view. And if you add to that reduced cash impact, expected benefit of improved working capital, you get the broadly neutral position that we're talking about in the guidance today, or in the estimations today. So now let's look at a slide on restructuring, because I'd like to say a few words about this in this context. this was going to be talked about initially on the 24th of November. We'll come back on the 24th of November and obviously add a lot more colour to this, and we'll probably add even more colour in February as well, because it's an ongoing programme. But let's say, when David first became CFO this time last year, he said that one of the jobs was to improve our management information, forecasting and business systems. So that was already in motion when I became CEO in July. It's a major and complex program, and that's well underway. But from what I've seen over the last several months, and importantly illustrated by the news today, we've got a lot more work to do on that. Right now, it's not working properly, and it needs to work better. My key requirement is to add a bit of pace to this and simplicity and accountability into decision-making in the business. And the business itself has really shown itself over the last several months to be much less able to respond to changes in the market conditions than should be the case. I also think, referring to the point made earlier about small revenue changes resulting in large profit changes, I think we're carrying far too much fixed cost, and we're not sufficiently flexible in managing the cost base in response to changing market conditions. And actually, that's just unacceptable for a world-class business, and particularly where we're operating in a very competitive environment. So we need to put into place some significant changes to make this business more resilient and sustainable, and we need to move a bit more rapidly with the restructuring in the light of the fact that we are facing further weakening in some of our key markets. It's too early to provide detailed costings of proposed restructuring, and we will give further information, as I said, later in this month on the 24th, and we'll provide, I'm sure, more detail with our results in February and updates after that. In the meantime, the previously announced restructuring that's going on in our marine and aerospace businesses, I'm pleased to report that's actually going well. And I'm also confident that the benefits of the actions that we're announcing today will also have a significant impact, and will be having a significant impact by the end of 2017. And with that, we'll open up to questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please can you press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now in order to enter the queue. And then after I announce you, just ask that question. And if you find that question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, just press 0 and then 2 to cancel. And could I please also ask you to restrict your questions to 3 per round. And there'll be a brief pause while questions are being registered. We go over to the line of Avi Hodges at Millennium Partners. Please go ahead, Avi. Your line is open.
Thank you. I have two questions. Earlier today, BAE said that they were going to be cutting Eurofighter production by about 50%. If we think about defense next year, earlier this morning, you expressed optimism about transport aftermarket. How would the headwind from the Eurojet going down compare with the potential tailwind from the aftermarket? Is it a disproportionately profitable OE business? And then on land and sea, I was wondering if I could just ask on the order side, how are orders shaping up in marine and power systems in the second half versus the first half? Could you give us some sort of colour, flavour on what magnitude of change we're seeing there sequentially? Thank you.
Yeah, so sorry, I did see the BAE announcement, although I haven't had a chance to discuss that with our defence team. But in terms of our own views on that, we already had basically a fairly conservative view on the engine production. Clearly, there are two recent opportunities, one around the Dubai contract, which was announced a few weeks ago, and then one that's still speculative at the moment around Saudi Arabia that could provide one of which will and the other could provide some upside. But we already had a fairly low view in terms of our own forecasts around production on that engine. In terms of land and sea orders, very different picture here, and partly reflects the fact that Power Systems is actually exposed to quite a wide range of, or the old Togman's, a wide range of markets,
yes, they do have some exposure to global commodities in mining and in oil, but we were already experiencing a very low level of demand in those markets anyway. So Power Systems went out of June with a record order book. They've actually had a decent order intake since then, so their order book is in reasonable shape. Clearly, it's a shorter cycle business, so we don't tend to be fully covered for the next year on orders anyway. But in terms of the progression, that's pretty satisfactory. Offshore marine is a very different picture, though. We've seen, actually since the mid-year, quite a significant drop in further order intake, which is the reason that we're taking, based on that now having continued for 3 or 4 months, taking the view that that's likely to result in a fairly significant downgrade in revenue next year. So quite different pictures, I think, between the two businesses.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're now over to the line of Harry Bridget, Raymond James. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, good afternoon, even, Warren and David. Can you hear me?
Yep,
perfect. Three questions. Firstly, can you give us any flavour on the 330 programme? One of the concerns back in July was about potentially sort of increasing competitive pressure for the remaining undecided customers for the remaining 330 CEO production slots, if I can call it that. How are things progressing in terms of your campaign wins on that? Is it sort of in line with or better than or worse than what you were hoping? And can you give us a flavor similarly on the pricing for that? Second question was, just looking at the time and materials side of the business, aside from the specific operators of certain older wide bodies that you touch on in the press release, can you give us any feel for your time and material aftermarket demand in particular outside of those specific operators? And then final question is, David, earlier on you touched on no change to your expectations or maybe the civil guys' expectations of 25-year service life on average for large engines. But I'm wondering if within that 25 years, are they making any change about the average annual flying hours within that? Specifically what I'm getting at is, are we perhaps seeing an environment where there is a greater propensity prematurely to park these older wide bodies because there's so much new supply coming on stream, and therefore are they just, is it going to be across the board issue for wide bodies, or do you feel that we can concentrate what's happened today on certain operators that had issues quite specific to them?
Yes. Okay. Let me take those, and Warren can obviously add anything as I go through. But in terms of the 330, actually, the estimate that we made at the end of June, early July, of the impact here has actually proven remarkably resilient. So I said at the time we thought the volume would be between 80 and 100 over the next couple of years, and that's proved to be a good assumption, and the pricing assumptions we made also. So actually that number is pretty well, was pretty accurate. We absolutely did see intense pricing pressure, but we've now, the majority of those deals are now firm. There may be one or two that still need a bit more work, but certainly with the Chinese orders that were agreed as part of the president's visit a couple of weeks back, then that's looking in pretty good shape in terms of the 330. So not good news in terms of margins, but in line with what we thought. In terms of T&M specifically, I mean, there's sort of a couple of aspects of that. Firstly, clearly one of the things that we're doing is continuing to increase reliability, which does, perversely, unfortunately, push out shop visits, and certainly, in terms of the discretion of people to do that, then that gives them a bit more flexibility. But the basic issue is much more around flying hours and and those older aircraft being parked than particularly T&M driven at the moment. And then on the 25 years, maybe I'll just repeat what I said again. So I didn't say, or what I said was this morning was the actual evidence is actually pretty consistent over the last 20 years in terms of being about 25 years on average. That number really hasn't moved. It's remarkably the same over the last 20 years. However, when we think about programs ourselves, we clearly look at different scenarios there, and that's not necessarily the assumption that we use when we're looking at individual programs, individual airline deals. We will take scenarios around that when coming up with our own pricing assumptions and evaluating the programs. All I was really saying is actually the evidence hasn't changed, but we are more cautious than that when we do our own evaluations.
Can I possibly just press just a little bit more on the T&M side? If we were to sort of isolate the specific carriers that you mentioned in the press release, is your T&M revenues in the second half so far sort of up year on year, or about the same, or something else?
I think in a way the issue is all about utilization. It's not about T&M contracts at all. It's about the fact that planes are simply not being used, and that's what's causing the issue that we're flagging as an issue that's going to be a headwind in 2016.
Okay, Warren, I'll leave it there. Thank you, David, too.
Okay,
thanks.
Okay, we now go on to Tristan Simpson at Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. So it's Tristan Simpson from Exane. I wanted to come back to the pressure that you're seeing on the older wide bodies aftermarket. And you mentioned that the key issue you're struggling with is the number of our aircraft being parked. Now, if we look at how this park rate evolved over the year, I have the impression that the main recent evolution was an acceleration of groundings on 777 powered by Trent 800 at a handful of airlines. What I struggle to understand is how you get to the £100 to £150 million of impact, because the number of aircraft and engines at stake is not so high in the end. So can you give us a bit of a feel for how you look at it? Is it a question of lower numbers of hour flowns, or is it driven by LLP content at your visits that will not happen? Is it all cash? Anything that can help us to understand how you build the 100, 150 would be helpful. And the second question is, I understand that the remarketing of these aircraft is made complex by debates on the residual values of the engine in the absence of an independent maintenance network for time and material for these. How can you work on improving the remarketing ability of these aircraft going forward? We see what you're going to do, or what you're doing with more Bonheur programs with Total Care Flex. Happy to see Cathay Pacific signing on that one. What can you do for older engine programs? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, on the first part of the question, I think, as I said this morning, actually in the first half of this year, we really didn't see an effect, and we actually experienced good aftermarket growth year over year. In the first half of this year, I'm just trying to recall the percentage, but it was sort of 5 or 6%, that kind of level. So this is quite a recent thing in terms of what we're seeing. So you're absolutely right. There have been some specific cases. What we're essentially doing, therefore, is looking at the whole fleet and taking an assessment across all the airlines, which causes us to be more conservative about how that might develop during next year as well. So it's not just what's already happened, it's what we expect may well happen over the next year. We all hope we're being cautious about that, but that's how we get to the higher number.
Okay, so the ratio per engine it doesn't mean a thing for... Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
And on the remarketing ability?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Total Care Flex is something that that we are just launching and may help. We're obviously having, you know, none of these situations is one that if we could avoid it happening, we'd much prefer it. So we will work with the airlines affected to see if there are alternative solutions. But the primary issue is really around their own capacity organization. That's what they're trying to address, and therefore sort of us trying to make it more viable for them to continue to fly isn't necessarily the right answer for them either. So the solution may actually be to try and facilitate those engines moving onto or aircraft and engines moving onto different owners, which is really one of the things that the TotalCare Flex product enables us to do in terms of working with other customers.
Thanks very much.
Just to remind all participants that if you wish to ask further questions, please can you press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now to enter the queue. Okay, as there are currently no more questions in the queue, gentlemen, may I please pass the call back to you?
Thank you very much, Hugh, and thank you all very much for taking part. As normally the case, a shorter list of questions in the afternoon. Hopefully that's no reflection of interest from shareholders, but please don't hesitate to contact the investor relations team if you have any questions, and of course we'll continue to reach out to you all over the next few days to provide further information and understanding of what we've said today. Thank you all very much for taking part. Thank you, Warren. Thank you, David, and good night.
This now concludes the call. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect.